all rise.
Thank you. Be seated, please. Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. We've got one case left on the docket that has been reset on the 24th of September, and it is John Alfred Christmas versus State. All right.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the court, counsel. We're here today on behalf of the appellant, Mr. John Christmas, and the key issue and the only issue that we've raised in this appeal is that his rights to a speedy trial were violated by the state of Texas in this case. The state is in agreement with us that the length in this case of 23 months before trial and pretrial incarceration triggers a further inquiry into the 4 points set out in Barker versus Wingo to do a balancing test to see to what extent they were violated and if it justifies a reversal and a dismissal in this case. Appellant Mr. Christmas is of the opinion that it does. He was charged with essentially 6 counts of aggravated assault and 1 count of possession of a prohibited weapon. The range of punishment on this offense is 2 to 20 years in prison. He was accused of firing at a vehicle with four minors in the car and I think two adults, and then further a search of his place, they found a prohibited weapon, a short-barreled shotgun. The reason why I think Mr. Christmas's case is unique is because he was incarcerated on December 14th of 2005, arrested initially on this charge. He was not appointed a lawyer or indicted for a full 6 months. He was indicted on June 12th of 2006. So he didn't have an attorney. He didn't have an indictment. He didn't know really what was going on in his case. So he was kind of left in the dark. And he wasn't actually taken to trial on this case until a full 23 months after his incarceration. And that was on November 6th of 2007. So after he was indicted, he was appointed counsel, and the case proceeded forward from that point. So the length of the delay here is excessive, considering the fact that after the trial, he was found guilty of all counts, but given a 2-year sentence. So he essentially served out his entire sentence before actually going to trial. And that's key in this case because he's lost the ability for parole laws to apply, which could have benefited him and shortened his sentence. And had he been acquitted, the state would have won regardless because his incarceration was so long that he'd served out his whole sentence before even the trial began. So the length of delay in this case is extreme considering he served out the entire sentence before going to trial. The second point that that Barker versus Wingo sets out is the reason for delay. Obviously, since he wasn't indicted until 6 months after his incarceration, the reason for delay on that part couldn't have been his fault. The reason for delay, the record is pretty silent on this issue. I know the appellee has filed the docket sheets, which show that the court had an extremely burdened docket, but that's not unlike most counties and most in the state of Texas. I think the record's also silent as to the number of cases that went to trial within that time frame from his indictment on June 12, 2006 up until November 6th of 2007. Mr. Christmas, I think the third factor that you need to consider is the defendant's assertion of the right. He did not have an attorney for those full 6 months while he was incarcerated. So he was incarcerated, not able to make bond. And he filed a motion to dismiss based on Section 32.01 of the Code of Criminal Procedure. While that doesn't deal specifically with speedy trial rights, it does deal with dismissal due to delay in bringing an indictment in the case. So he's filed that as his only means of really seeking the relief that he wanted, is release and without, you know, extensive knowledge of the law, and without a prior criminal history in his case, he wasn't very experienced with the criminal justice system, that that assertion of his right is not really waived by him, or not asserted very vehemently, but it does go into his favor in the balancing test. That motion that he filed to dismiss under Section 3201 wasn't heard until 13 months after his indictment. That was on August 16th of 2007. The court ended up denying that motion based on technical grounds, but it shows that Mr. Christmas is frustrated with the way his case is going, wants something to happen on it, and the record shows that when the court initial his first appearance on June 26th of 2006, at his arraignment and setting of the pretrial, he voiced his frustration, and the court ended up appointing an attorney. And his frustration was heard by the court, and not until August 16th of 2007. The prejudice that the defendant received in this case is the excessive pretrial detention. Some of the factors the court set out in Barker versus Wingo is the length of the pretrial incarceration. The goal of the speedy trial is to have these cases resolved in an expeditious manner and judicious manner, and to avoid situations like this where the person is incarcerated the entire amount of his sentence before he even goes to trial, and to minimize anxiety and to prohibit a impairment of the defense. While it's not as easy to point to the impairment of the defense in this case, but Mr. Christmas testified that he wanted a witness, Mr. Rhodes, to testify in this case. He was unable to have him testify. The record's silent as to the exact facts that he would have been able to testify to, but a silent record on this point does not count against him, I think, in this fact. The anxiety, the minimizing the anxiety is another factor to consider when the court looks at the prejudice to the defendant. This is a man who's never been convicted of a felony before. He's incarcerated for 2 years awaiting trial, and the anxiety is going to be great with someone like him. He's not a person that's been in and out of the system a whole lot, and the court, it's noted in the record that he was filing these motions because he had no other choice. He initially filed a notice of appearance, and the court asked him if he wanted to represent him, represent himself or have an attorney appointed. And he replied that the reason why he was filing the notice of the representation is because he had no other choice. He didn't know what to do. So I think the anxiety that he felt in this case is great. And the 23 months for an uncomplicated case where it's a simple shooting without police officers or police officers' testimony or drug testing, lab results from ballistics evidence, weighs heavily in the defendant's favor. I think based on the facts and the law before you, that the proper decision in this case would be to reverse Mr. Christmas's convictions and order that the case be dismissed. Do y'all have any questions?
Any questions? All right.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court and counsel. First, I'd like to thank the court for one thing, for rescheduling this from last week. I think both Mr. Rasmussen and myself had funerals we felt obliged to attend, and we appreciate you.
Well, let me say, I joined in that request because I lost my sister-in-law and brother-in-law within 5 days last week, so I couldn't have been here anyway, so okay, it
sorry,
was good.
But we appreciate
to have it
that.
Done. Thanks.
May it please the court, I think the matter before the court, the state certainly has to admit two things right off the bat, and that is, in terms of the length of delay, there's no good reason that appears in the record for it, and on terms of the reason for delay, the same thing. The record is very poorly developed in terms of the any reasons set forth for the state being so long in reaching indictment or again in reaching trial. The state has to rely primarily on the extent of the defendant's assertion of the right or the appellant's assertion of the right and the nature and extent of any delay any prejudice to the defendant because of that delay. I would point out that in terms of the matters which are complained of making it before the trial court, there was a continuing problem in the case in the sense of pretrials being set off again. For example, the first pretrial set in, I believe, was in probably on the same day, I believe, in fact, on the same day that counsel was appointed, that is 6-28-06. Reset then to September 25th, reset then by agreement to November 27th. The reason for bringing this up is that throughout this period, there's no motion for speedy trial presented to the court as such. When one is finally presented to the court, it's actually filed on the day that jury selection begins in the case and actually heard the next day before the actual start of trial and calling of witnesses. Prior to that time, in August, appellant had presented his own motion, I believe a handmade motion, where he raised the failure to be indicted within 6 months under Code of Criminal Procedure 3201. The hearing was held on that in August. It was denied. From the record, it was said at that hearing that defense counsel certainly intended to file a motion for change of venue, which just never seemed to be filed or heard. So throughout a long period of time, at least beginning at the end of September 2006, I think there was kind of a presumption on the part of all parties that at some point motions would be heard by the court at one of these set pretrials that just never were. I think appellant argues that, well, he presented to the court this motion under 32.01, that perhaps the court should have gone into kind of general Speedy Trial Act considerations at that time. The fact is he didn't, and the fact is the argument on that motion was very narrowly focused on 3201.
I have a question. Did I hear you say at the outset that you felt like the first two factors weighed in the defendant's favor and you were going to focus on...
Okay. 23 months is a long time and not something that should have gone on that long.
Okay. Concerning the case law, it seems like our court has had several speedy trial cases handed down here recently. The most recent one was just petition for a review denied by the Court of Criminal Appeals, where we reversed and acquitted, which is fairly unusual. But it was a 12-year delay between the indictment and the arrest. And it seems like the case law primarily focuses on delays between the indictment and the arrest, because the defendant, for whatever reason, flees or becomes unavailable. But I'm not aware of any case law where this period of time has elapsed between an arrest and an indictment. Does that change the weight given to that factor at all? In other words, even though you've said it weighs against the state, does it weigh more heavily against the state because it's pre-indictment?
I cannot put my finger on any authority that says so, Judge. I think the only thing that I can surmise is, I was not district attorney at the time, I was an assistant, is it probably is the reason for most delays between arrest and indictment, that is the lack of a complete report from the arresting agency. For whatever reason, but that's, again, arguing almost outside the record. The state, for better or worse, because the timing of the motion for speedy trial was kind of left in a situation where it was scrambling to put something on the record, really thinking the time was past for raising those issues. As I say, the day after Vordire, after jury seating and so forth, the record's very poorly developed by the state, I have to admit. I cannot point to anything that says, yes, that should be more heavily considered. I think the length of delay is definitely something that weighs against the state.
Thank you.
We would wish it were not so. At any rate, I think the delay, the record is not entirely silent on the issue of delay. The state does, in that short period on the 7th of November, sought it to at least put something on the record about the crowded condition of the docket. Even if you presume that there was... some prejudice to the defendant, I think that can be attenuated by his failure to assert his right. And as I say, in this case, throughout this period, it was never really asserted until the trial was actually about to begin. In fact, after the pretrials on the first day of trial. And in that respect, I mean, all I can say is the state responds to what's before it. If it's not raised before that, the state has no opportunity or no occasion to contest the matter or to argue. It just simply wasn't raised. It probably should have been by defense counsel, but I don't see that it was. In terms of prejudice to the defendant, the burden's on him to make a prima facie showing of prejudice because of the delay. The most that he does in this regard is to make a statement about the general loss of memory over periods of time and changing addresses. He's not specific in any sense about what the actual prejudice caused him by the delay would be. There is a case, I believe Shaw, State versus Munoz, where this court held that the bare assertion of diminished memories over time is not a showing of impairment. At the same time, in terms of showing the impairment of defense, he says that he lacks a witness, a Mr. Rhodes, who was a prisoner, and states kind of cryptically when he's asked about that Mr. Rhodes would have information that's not in the statement without identifying the statement, what the testimony would be, whether Rhodes was available for, what he's done to locate him. So the defendant doesn't come close, I think, to showing a prejudice to himself resulting from the delay.
What about the fact that he served his entire sentence?
Well, I think that's a point, again, that weighs against the state, Judge. I can't say that he doesn't.
Because it looks like under Barker, the three factors for the prejudice are to prevent oppressive pretrial incarceration, to minimize the accused's anxiety and concern, and then to limit the possibility of diminishing memory. So it looks like two out of the three of at least the articulated reasons there would be in the defendant's favor of showing prejudice.
I think they are, but I think the burden is still on him to show the diminished memory in more than some kind of generalized statement. That, in fact, in some specific way, that has cost him in the case or prejudiced his ability to defend himself. And as I say, there is one case in point that says that kind of an appeal to the loss of memory
the over Munoz.
Time is not enough.
The Munoz case?
That's what I'm referring to. So I think the court has to do this weighing, balancing matter that is indicated by the appellant, weighing the length of the delay, the causes of the delay, which, again, are not well developed. Against the extent of the defendant's assertion of his right and the nature and extent of any prejudice resulting from the delay. Again, I could, I think, lay out reasons for the delay, but I'm arguing outside the record. There's no point to go there. And it has to do with some extraordinary things going on at the time in the office and the fact that there, during much this time, there was only one prosecutor in the office. But leaving that aside, it was an extraordinary length of time. The state can only say it responded to the issue when it was belatedly presented and did so in a way that attempted to make at least some record. And then point to the record of the case itself where we can point out the defendant never really asserted this right until it was almost too late to assert it when the trial was beginning. And through a period from June of 06 on when he had counsel to do that. So we didn't feel it incumbent on the state to raise that matter for him. But we believe in terms of what he's put forward to the court, in terms of weighing against those other factors, he simply failed to put it forward for the court's consideration. And again, that's basically all I have. If you have questions, I'd be glad to respond to
questions.
No more questions.
All right.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you, Your Honors.
You've got 5 minutes.
Thank you. Just briefly, Your Honor, Your Honors, Barker Court rejected the rule that a defendant who fails to demand a speedy trial forever waives that right. I think it is a factor that will count against Mr. Christmas in this case. There was never a speedy trial motion filed. I think and the record's pretty clear that these motions that were filed regarding his release under 3201 and regarding the motion to dismiss based on the speedy trial were all handwritten motions filed by Mr. Christmas. They were not filed by his attorney on this case. And that shows that he's going above and beyond what his attorney's doing in the case and showing his frustration to the court, feeling that his attorney, you can only assume from the record, that he's not filing the proper motions and that he's filing these motions on his own behalf. Also, with regard to the prejudice that he sustained in this case is the fact that he served out the maximum of his entire sentence, and he loses the fact of the benefit of parole in this case. And the state in this case, since he had two of the sentences probated, or recommended probation in two of the cases, since he served the maximum time, the state has no really hammer over him should he violate the probation in some way. So, I mean, they can't revoke his suspended sentence when he's already served the maximum sentence. Impressive pretrial detention in this case, there's really no justification for it. And what really concerns me is the fact that he was incarcerated indigent for 6 months without an attorney appointed. And routinely, you would file for a release after 90 days because of no indictment in the case. And he didn't have an attorney to do that. He didn't. And he could have been released via that method had he had an attorney and been indicted. The case would have proceeded further and more quickly. But he was not released under those rules, and he was incarcerated without an attorney, basically, just out there on his own and no help in that regard. So I think that's one of the factors that should weigh heavily in the favor of Mr. Christmas, the time of his incarceration and the time of indictment. It's excessively long. It's an unreasonable delay, and I think it weighs heavily in his favor. That's all I have, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you for your arguments. They've been helpful. And you are dismissed, and you'll hear from us shortly. And I believe that concludes our docket for the day.
All rise. The Honorable Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit is now recessed.